أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. As we discussed last week, we start the discussion of chapter 30 of the Quran from this week, inshallah, which starts from Surah An-Naba, Surah number 78, until the end of the Quran. Altogether, it contains 37 surahs, and most of its surahs, majority of its surahs, of course, are revealed in Mecca and at the beginning of Revelation. Especially the shorter ones are revealed at the very, very beginning of the Revelation. Surah An-Naba, or Surah Amma Yatasa'alun, or Surah Al-Muqsirat, are different names given to Surah 78 of the Quran. It is reported from the Prophet through Abdullah ibn Abbas, who said, "Shayyabatni Hud wal Waqa wal Mursalat wa Amma Yatasa'alun." Four surahs, Surah Hud, Surah Waqa, and Surah Mursalat, and Surah An-Naba, Surah Amma Yatasa'alun, made me old. And the context is that once Abu Bakr asked the Prophet, peace be on him, "Asra ilayka shayb," why you quickly grew old. That was, of course, after the revelation. It seems that after the revelation, just in a matter of 3-4 years, Prophet grew old very, very quickly. It showed in his face, and he was asked, "Why have you so quickly grown old?" And Prophet said, "Surah Hud and Surah Waqa'a and Mursalat and Naba made me, Amma Yatasa'alun, made me to grow old so quickly." Now, of course, there are very different meanings that could be attached to this statement of the Prophet, that why did he grow old so quickly because of these four surahs. Well, three of them, certainly Surah Al-Mursalat and Amma Yatasa'alun and Waqa'a, they are very, very severe warnings about the Day of Judgment. Of course, Surah Hud, there are warnings in Surah Hud as well, but the main theme of the surah is not the Day of Judgment. What can be understood from this statement of the Prophet is that apart from the meaning that we understand from the verses of the Quran, Prophet had another type of understanding from these verses. And no matter how many times he read and he recited these verses, the fresh meanings about these issues came to his heart. And that made him very much influenced and impressed by those meanings. It is said, of course, that Quran, if you recite it properly, and if you recite it with attentive heart, not attentive mind, attentive heart, if you recite it like that, then of course it brings always new meanings to your heart. No matter how many times you have recited one surah or one ayah, the next time that you recite it, a new meaning comes to your heart. And that's why Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam said that this Quran is always fresh. Its wonders never end. And this is apparently his own experience of the Quran, that whenever he recited the Quran, new meanings came. And this is why the Prophet, peace be on him, used to recite the Quran several hours every day. It's certainly not only for the purpose of Sawab that Prophet recited the Quran. Rather, several hours every night. إِنَّ رَبَّكَ يَعْلَمُ أَنَّكَ تَقُومُ أَدْنَى مِنْ ثُلُثَيِ اللَّيْلِ وَنِصْفَهُ وَثُلُثَهُ وَطَائِفَةٌ مِّنَ الَّذِينَ مَعَكَ. Allah knows that you keep awake half of the night, two-thirds of the night, one-third of the night, depending on different situations, and you recite this Quran. And that was for the meaning of these verses, the inner meanings of these verses that struck the heart whenever, of course, the Prophet or any pure-hearted person, whenever they recite the Quran. There are many, many instances of recitation of the Quran for the Prophet that impressed him very much as he had never heard these verses before. For example, Abdullah ibn Mas'ud says that once Prophet told me to recite Quran for him, and I started to recite Surah Yunus, and when I came to this verse, وَرُدُّوا إِلَى اللَّهِ مَوْلَاهُمُ الْحَقِّ, they are returned to their Lord, the true guardian, the true Mawla of them, I saw that the eyes of the Prophet was full of tears. And it is mentioned about many, many other verses, that when people recited these verses to the Prophet, the Prophet started to cry in as if a new meaning came to his heart. Now, of course, this is why we are told, we are advised to recite the Quran very frequently, especially in night, especially in Salat. In Salat al-Layl, especially, we are told that it's good to recite the Quran because of those fresh meanings which is inspired to the heart. The same meanings that you read and you explain, however, it is something that you grasp it by your heart. Something that every time, if Allah wishes, comes very, very heavily, striking your heart, the meanings actually try to come into your heart, when, of course, with a pure heart, with an attentive and repentive heart, one recites the Quran, they try to come in. And, of course, no matter how deep and how fresh these meanings are, maybe, if someone asks you, what's the meaning of the verse, you would say the same thing that you initially read. It's not something that you could explain. It's the same meaning. However, it is felt deeper. It is felt heavier. It is felt in a way that, as if you are visualizing what Allah is saying. And these are the inspirations which come with the meaning, with the recitation of the Quran to pure hearts. And this is what most pure-hearted people have actually mentioned and have said, that when they recite the Quran, these meanings come to their heart. They are inspired in a way. It's as if they are revealed, those meanings are revealed to them. Anyhow, what I wanted to explain was that when Prophet said, شَيَّبَتْنِي سُورَةُ هُود وَالْوَاقَعَةُ وَالْمُرْسَلَاتُ وَأَمَّا يَتَسَاءَلُونَ, why he says this? Because the meanings that these verses introduced to his heart, especially about the Day of Judgment, especially about what happens to people. And it is, of course, very horrible if someone really knows and feels and sees, visualizes what is going to happen to these people who are around you on the Day of Judgment. What's going to happen to them in Jahannam, in the hell. And that's why, probably that's why Prophet has said such a thing about these surahs. Okay, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Amma yatasa'alun an al-naba'il azim alladhi hum fihi mukhtalifun. What is it about which they question each other, or they have a conversation about it with each other? Because tasa'ul loses the meaning of questioning. It more gives the meaning of conversation. What are they talking about? Why are they talking about such a thing immensely? Well, of course, they are questioning and talking about the great tidings. And then naba'il azim. Naba is an important news. And now, of course, when it comes with azim, a very, very big, great, important news. الَّذِي هُمْ فِيهِ مُخْتَلِفُونَ, the one about which they differ. كَلَّا سَيَعْلَمُونَ ثُمَّ كَلَّا سَيَعْلَمُونَ, no indeed, they will soon know. Again, no indeed, they will soon know. Now, what is this Naba'ul Azim, this big, very important news or tidings about which they are talking, they have a conversation with each other about it. To know that, we have to certainly know when this surah was revealed. Of course, there is no mention of exact time of the revelation of this surah. Some exegetes, for example, Maybudi in his tafsir, have said that this is the last surah which was revealed to the Prophet in Mecca, after which he migrated to Medina. So this puts it in the 13th year of the Hijrah. However, neither the context of the surah nor the style of the surah would agree with it. It should be somewhere towards the beginning of Revelation, not that far, because what it talks about in terms of the bounties of paradise and the chastisement of the hell are so short and also so summarized in such a summarized way that it insinuates that they should have been at the beginning of Revelation rather than leaving it for the 13th year of Revelation. The beginning verses probably would guide us that this is a news they heard from the prophets and they could not agree on it. They could not accept it. So it should be at the very beginning of the call of the prophets, calling Mushrikun of Mecca to his mission. What comes, of course, later on in the surah about the Day of Judgment would show that the disagreement should have been about this Day of Judgment. And therefore, it is very quite appropriate to put this surah immediately after the opening of da'wah by the Prophet. When he opened the da'wah after 3 years, it should be therefore after Surah Hijr, because in Surah Hijr we have the command to the Prophet saying that فَشْتَعْ بِمَا تُؤْمَرْ وَأَعْرَضْ عَنِ الْمُشْرِكِينَ, open what you are told to call people to, what you are commanded to, and turn away from mushrikeen. We will keep you safe from whatever they do, especially from the mocking and ridiculing that they will do. And of course, Prophet revealed his mission. So this is after Prophet revealed his mission, and then the people started to talk about it, and to talk about the content of that mission. Now, of course, the content of the mission at the beginning, when the Prophet went on the on Mount Safa and called people to his mission, was of course Tawheed, and very, very importantly, what Prophet mentioned at the very beginning was that you are going to be raised after death. This was the most important, of course, subject that Prophet raised, which was somehow very strange to Mushrikun of Mecca. It is said that when the verse in Surah Hijr was revealed, فَشْتَعْ بِمَا تُؤْمَرْ وَأَعْرَضْ عَنِ الْمُشْرِكِينَ, reveal what you are commanded to and turn away from mushrikeen. Prophet went on Safa, he called people to himself, he said, wa sabaha, that was a call whenever a very, very important matter happened, for example, an army was attacking Mecca or whatever, someone went on Safa, the first person who had the information, he went on the Safa and called people together and to think about something, and of course this was not something that could be played with. If someone did this without any reason, just to make a joke, he would have been punished very severely, because then the whole purpose of this important function would have been defined. So Prophet went on Safa and he said, wa sabaha, and everyone rushed to the Prophet to see what has happened, what is so important that the Prophet is calling. And then Prophet said, if I tell you that an army of enemy is approaching from behind these mountains, would you believe me? They said, yes, we never have heard any lie from you. He said, now I tell you, I am a warner from your Lord to you, and I tell you, kama تنامون تموتون وكما تستيقظون تبعثون. The same way as you sleep you die, and the same way as you wake up you rise from your grave. And then of course he said إني لكم نذير مبين بين يدي عذاب شديد. I am a clear warner for you before a very very severe punishment. And therefore what Prophet said at the beginning was the day of judgment, you are going to be raised. And this certainly created lots of just gossip and chant among those who heard this. Maybe some people laughing at the Prophet, and some people saying that why do you use this very, very important institution of information that we have for important news for such a thing. And therefore they started to talk. أَمَّا يَتَسَأَلُونَ. What is it that we are talking about? So if we put it in that context, then we should say that it is the first sort of statement of the Prophet which was directed towards, openly towards the people of Mecca, and then they started to talk about it. Now if we go to other verses of the Quran, we see that the subjects of the most conversation about the Prophet were three things. One was about the Quran itself. Is this word of God, or this is slander? This is something made up and then attributed to God. أَفْتَرَى عَلَى اللَّهِ كَذِبًا. This man has attributed lies to God. And the second thing was about the Quran itself. What type of literature is this? Why we cannot resist it? Is this a poetry? Is this a magic? Or is this قول كاهن, the word of a sorcerer? This is the second thing. And the third thing, which is even more conspicuous in the Quran, is about the raising of the dead. Now, going to the context and looking at the surah, the verses which follows talk about the day of judgment. So this important thing of which they were talking was the day of judgment. Some of this conversation is, of course, quoted in the Quran. For example, in Surah Saba, we have وَقَالَ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا هَلْ نَدُلُّكُمْ عَلَىٰ رَجُلٍ. Now they started to mock and they started to deride the Prophet for what he said, because they did not believe, the Mushrikun of Mecca, they did not believe in the Day of Judgment. So, even if they believed, they did not believe in the bodily, physical resurrection. Some people believe that there might be some spiritual type of continuation of human life. Some of them believe that, as we may see in some verses. But of course, the majority believe that there is no resurrection, there is no life after death, especially when it came to physical resurrection, that bodies are going to be raised. This was something that they totally took as a subject of derision and mockery for the Prophet. So in Surah Saba it is said, وَقَالَ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا هَلْ نَدُلُّكُمْ عَلَىٰ رَجُلٍ يُنَبِّئُكُمْ إِذَا مُزَّقْتُمْ كُلَّ مُمَزَّقٍ إِنَّكُمْ لَفِي خَلْقٍ جَدِيدٍ. Do you want us to show you a man who says when you die and when you are decomposed, when you are torn into different pieces and you are turned to dust, then you are going to be a new creation. أَفْتَرَى عَلَى اللَّهِ كَذِبًا أَمْ بِهِ جِنَّةٍ. Has he attributed lies to God, or he is a mad person? Certainly, of course, someone talking of these things, he should be either mad or he should have become ill, schizophrenic, attributing lies, such things to God. So this is one topic which Quran mentioned. And this, of course, you could see all through the Quran, they have this conversation with each other. أَيَعِدُكُمْ أَنَّكُمْ إِذَا مِتْتُمْ وَكُنْتُمْ تُرَابًا وَإِذَامًا أَنَّكُمْ تُبْعَثُونَ. What this man is promising you is telling you that when you die and when you turn into dust and bone, then you are going to be raised again. هَيْهَاتَ هَيْهَاتَ لِمَا تُعَدُونَ. This is very, very far away from reason what you are promised by this man. And many, many other verses. So, considering the concept, context, because the Mufassirun have said this Nabawan Azim could refer to three things. One, it could refer to the very Nubuwwah of the Prophet, the prophethood, because Prophet, what he declared at the beginning of his mission was that I am a warner coming from God to you. So they started to talk about this. The second is the Quran itself, the literature, which of course was to some extent known in the 3 years, after the 3 years of revelation, which many, many people had heard verses of the Quran, although Prophet had not openly revealed his mission. And thirdly, what goes also with the context of the surah is, of course, the Day of Judgment. This is the Day of Judgment of which they are talking and they are having conversation with each other. And this is the big news. This is not an ordinary news given to you by the Prophet. And therefore, the use of the term An-Naba'ul Azim is very much in place, because usually the Mushrikun expected anyone going on Safa and calling Wa Sabaha or Wa Masa'a, calling people, he should have had a very, very important news. Something which would have been, would have affected the whole life of the people of Mecca. And when Prophet said, of course, I warn you that there is a punishment ahead of you, you are going to be raised, they took it very slightly, very lightly. They said, well, what type of news is this? You have used this institution of relaying the information for such a trivial thing. And of course, here it said, no, this is very, very big news. This is the biggest news of your life, the biggest information that anyone could have given you in your life. So we try to understand this in the context of Day of Judgment, resurrection of the dead, rising of the dead after death, and then of course what follows. أَمَّا يَتَسَأَلُونَ عَنِ النَّبَإِ الْعَظِيمِ. Now, of course, I mentioned the word of the Mufassirun, the whole three opinions which are mentioned in the books of Exegesis. There is one other interpretation for this which prevails in many Shi'i books of tradition and Shi'i books of Exegesis, and that is An-Naba'ul Azim is Al-Walaya. And then another meaning, An-Naba'ul Azim is Amirul Mu'mineen alayhi salam, of whom the Prophet, of course, Prophet informed about him that he is going to be the Washi, he is going to be the Wali, and he said, Man kuntu mawla, fahada aliyyun mawla, Allahumma wali man walah wa adi man ada. So An-Naba'ul Azim is Amirul Mu'mineen. And therefore, you find in books of exegesis that Shia exegesis, they mention, of course, four opinions about this this verse, An-Naba'ul Azim. They say it might be the Quran, it might be Nubuwwah of the Prophet, and it might be Day of Judgment, and it is reported from A'imma alayhimus salam that Naba'ul Azim is Walaya and Amirul Mu'mineen. And well, of course, every Shi'i coming to the word of A'imma alayhimus salam says, so this is what is meant by it. However, of course, to put that into context, this is the third year, probably third year of revelation of the mission of the Prophet, and Prophet going to on Safa, talking to Mushrikun, who do not believe in God, who do not believe in the Day of Judgment, do not believe in the Nubuwwah of the Prophet, and say that Ali is my Washi. That of course seems very ridiculous to think in that way. So there is a mistake here, I think, by those exegetes who put the explanation about Naba'ul Azim as being Amirul Mu'min or Walaya at the level of the explanations given by the exegesis, the Quran and Nubuwwah and Day of Judgment, because that is, as we have discussed before, that is actually taking instances from the verses and going into the batn, into deep, deep meanings of the Quran, which is ta'wil. You never can put a ta'wil of a verse parallel to the tafsir of that verse, because then they would contradict each other. Why ta'wil could not contradict tafsir? Ta'wil comes from a different direction of understanding of the Quran. Its ta'wil is made after the verses are revealed completely in their context, and after, of course, asbab al-nuzul are known, then, of course, a deep someone who, of course, is connected to the world of ta'wil, not ordinary people cannot do this, certainly. Then they can say, okay, one of the instances of Naba'ul Azim, which people talk about, is Wilayat. And that is a very, very big move, of course. That doesn't contradict the idea that Naba'ul Azim was, of course, the Day of Judgment, which Prophet talked about. It was in the context of Tanzil, really, the case. However, if you go to the Ta'wil, another meaning of Naba'ul Azim is Wilayat, is Amirul Mu'mineen, and therefore when we talk about this, we shouldn't put them parallel. And that's why you see, whenever in Tafsir al-Mizan of Allama Tabatabai, whenever he brings these traditions, he says that this is from the batn, this is from ta'wil, and we shouldn't put it parallel or side by side with Tafsir of the Quran. Anyhow, so we are now talking about the Tafsir of the Quran, and in Tafsir, I think we can safely, after all these discussions, say that An-Naba'ul Azim is the Day of Judgment. The biggest piece of news that anyone could give you in this world, that after you die, you are going to rise again alive, and you are going to meet your Lord. This is the biggest news, the most important news that anyone can give you. Now, the following verse says, الَّذِي هُمْ فِيهِ مُخْتَلِفُونَ, the one about which they differ. Now, there is a problem here, because of course, mushrikun, they did not differ about the non-existence of the Day of Judgment. They all believe that there is no Day of Judgment. There is no resurrection after death. وَقَالُوا إِنْ هِيَ إِلَّا حَيَاتُنَا الدُّنْيَا نَمُوتُ وَنَحْيَا وَمَا يُهْلِكُنَا إِلَّا الدَّهْرُ. There is nothing but the life of this world. We die, other people come to life. It's just a continuous process. Now, of course, nowadays we call it evolution. On those days, they didn't have such terms, but they taught in the same line that it's just وَمَا يُهْلِكُنَا إِلَّا الدَّهْرُ. It's that. They called it dahr. We call it evolution. They called it dahr. That it's just that. It's just time which brings people about, and then they die, other people come about. So they did not differ that there is no Day of Judgment. وَقَالُوا أَإِذَا مِتْنَا وَكُنَّا عِظَامًا وَتُرَابًا أَإِنَّا لَفِي خَلْقٍ جَدِيدٍ. Well, how strange you say that when we die and we are born and dust, then we are going to be in a new creation. So they did not differ on this. So what is the meaning of أَلَّذِي هُمْ فِيهِ مُخْتَلِفُونَ? Now, مُخْتَلِفُونَ, which is, of course, a sentence in which sigatu fa'il is used, is for continuation. Continuously they are, of course, differing on this subject. Some experts say that, well, although these mushrikun, all of them, they denied the physical resurrection, however, some of them believe in a spiritual resurrection, or not resurrection, is a continuation of the life of the soul. And therefore, some of them said, no, we are not going to be raised. Some said, well, if we continue to live, then that's just like a resurrection or something like that. But all these, there is no evidence for that. So, maybe we have to change this hum, this pronoun, hum, alladhi hum, those, they are actually disagreeing with, deferring about, not to the mushrikun of Mecca. Maybe we should somehow think about this pronoun going back to the whole human race. This is a news about which the whole human race has been differing, during the history. Some people have believed in it, some people haven't believed. Continuously people have had different opinions about this Day of Judgment. And now that you have come and informed these mushrikun of Mecca about it, then of course they are questioning each other, they are talking about it. So, الَّذِي هُمْ فِيهِ مُخْتَلِفُونَ means something that the human race have disagreed about, have mixed these different opinions about it. And then, of course, the very, very powerful sentence, كَلَّا, this كَلَّا is, they say, for رَدَّ, to deny something which is a stated, to deny something which is claimed. So, this is not the case. Now, kalla refers maybe to what they say in their tasa'ul, in their conversation. It is not the case. Or this ikhtilaf, this disagreement, this difference of opinion that they have, it is not right because they soon will know. They soon will know, of course, after they die, immediately after they die, they know that what is the truth about this matter. So this is again another warning. كلا سيعلمون. No, indeed, they will soon know. ثم كلا سيعلمون. Now, usually exegetes say that when a sentence is repeated twice in the Quran, especially when ثم comes after the first sentence, it wants to emphasize the meaning. Now here, of course, it's emphasis of the threat that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is threatening that you will soon know. You might have different opinions, you might mock, you might deride, you whatever, but soon you will know what is the truth of the matter. Or they say that these two different sentences might refer to different type of information that people soon will know. So the first kalla sayalamun means no, indeed, soon they will know after they die, they will know what is the truth of the matter. And soon they will know when we put them in the hell. When we place them in the hell, they will know that whatever you said about the chastisement, adabun shadid, they will know that this is the truth of the matter. Now, there is an argument which is produced in several sentences, and an argument which is used very much in the Quran. Now, I will mention why I say this argument is used very much in the Quran, although in many different forms. أَلَمْ نَجْعَلِ الْأَرْضَ مِهَادًا وَالْجِبَالَ أَوْتَادًا وَخَلَقْنَاكُمْ أَزْوَاجًا وَجَعَلْنَا نَوْمَكُمْ سُبَاتًا وَجَعَلْنَا اللَّيْلَ لِبَاسًا وَجَعَلْنَا النَّهَارَ مَعَاشًا وَبَنَيْنَا فَوْقَكُمْ سَبْعًا شِدَادًا وَجَعَلْنَا سِرَاجًا وَحَاجًا وَأَنْزَلْنَا مِنَ الْمُؤْصِرَاتِ مَاءً ثَجَّاجًا لِنُخْرِجَ بِهِ حَبًّا وَنَبَاتًا وَجَنَّاتٍ أَلْفَافًا. So that is a complete 10 verses which produces this argument. Did we not make the earth a resting place and the mountains stakes and create you in pairs, and make your sleep for rest, and make the night a covering, and make the day for livelihood, and build above you the seven mighty heavens, and the sun for radiant lamp, and send down water pouring from the rain clouds, that with it we may bring forth grains and plants and luxuriant gardens. This is the argument that is somehow put forward about the truth of the Day of Judgment. Now you might say, what type of argument is this? Why, to prove the Day of Judgment, Allah has talked about what He has created in this world. So this is something that, inshallah, we have to talk about next week. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa ala alihi.
Thank you
very
much, Sheikh.
Right in the beginning, you gave this surah three different names. Weren't the names also decided as the surahs were decided before the death of the Prophet? And why, if not why not, or have we forgotten?
No, yes, the names of the surahs were given by the Prophet. But usually the most outstanding word in the surah, or term in the surah, was used. And maybe the Prophet himself used different meanings for the surahs. Or he might have used only one, different names. He might have used only one name, but because of the different, that one outstanding word, or several outstanding words in a surah, people used to call the surah the same thing. For example, Prophet used to say surah to Amma Yatasa'alun, but since it's called, it's mentioned Amma Yatasa'alun, and Naba al-Azim is called Surah Naba as well. But it is known for sure that Prophet used names for the surah. And Ubay ibn Ka'b, the great, of course, a scholar of the Quran, who was a companion of the Prophet, he has mentioned the thawab of every surah, reporting it from the Prophet. And he has actually given names to every surah reported from the Prophet, peace be on him. So, for example, he said, Man qara'a suratun amma yatasa'alun, whoever recites surah amma, or Man qara'a surah waqa'a, whoever recites surah waqa'a. So, Prophet actually himself had given names to the surah. It might be argued that at different instances, Prophet might have used different names for one surah. That's why the surahs are, have different names. Some of the surahs, of course, not all of them.
Yeah. In this case, it's so early that the information, can you further digress? Surah Barat, for example, we've also heard that it's not really a surah by itself, but it's a continuation of the previous surah. How does this make sense?
No, when they say it's not a surah in itself, but a continuation, they mean that the context continues, or the meanings mentioned in the previous surah continues in Surah Bara'ah. However, of course, the Prophet, peace be on him, gives this surah a different name, a completely different name, from where it starts as Bara'atun min Allahi wa Rasulihi ila alladhina ahadtum min al-mushrikeen. From this place, of course, although it doesn't have Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Prophet gave it a name. However, of course, you know, as whatever is reported from the Prophet, later on created some disagreement about the scholars, about these issues of the Quran also, some disagreement came about. And that's why, for example, some people thought that the two last surahs of the Quran were not parts of the Quran. Because they say Abdullah ibn Mas'ud did not write Qul A'udhu bi Rabbil Falaq and Qul A'udhu bi Rabbil Nas in his Quran. And his Quran was 112 surahs rather than 114 surahs. And this has caused this idea that therefore these two were not surahs, were just something that Prophet used to recite. However, of course, the other side would say that no, Abdullah ibn Mas'ud, although he didn't bring it in his Quran, because he relied on the fact that every Muslim knew these two surahs and they recited it every day. So he didn't want to mention at the end of the Quran. I think whatever area we go in, we find disagreement. However, the idea of the majority and the more soundly proved ideas we should take. And about Bara, of course, we have that soundly proved idea that it's, of course, two surahs. Anfal and Bara. We have the same problem with four other surahs, Surah Zuha and Alam Nashrah and Fil and Ila Quraysh, which of course even when you recite it in the Quran, you have to recite two together because the jurists doubt whether one of these surahs would suffice in the Quran, in the Salat, as the surah which should be recited after the Fatiha.
Any sisters?
When you mentioned about reciting Quran, I have two questions. Should that be done in Arabic? And if we're not native Arabic speakers, how do we get the meaning that you alluded to?
Yeah, I don't know. Usually those who have said that these meanings really come to the mind, to the heart, when people recite the Quran, of course, they all have had Arabic recitation in mind. Whether it could be achieved by a translation of these verses or not, certainly, to some extent, we can say yes, but not, of course, the full benefit that might come from the Arabic recitation of the Quran. That should urge us to go and learn Arabic and recite the Quran in Arabic, certainly.
I digress a bit, quite a different topic. Could you comment on the traditions that practice that say that if we didn't sin, then Allah give rise to commit that it sins that shows characteristics of being forgiven? How does that fit?
If what, sorry?
If we didn't sin, then mm-hmm. you'll give rise to a community that did sin, so you can show him that you are being forgiven.
If we don't sin and he does what, sorry?
So that he can show his attribute of being forgiven. Otherwise he will be forgiven.
Okay. Yes. So we better sin so that his attributes are somehow unfolded. No, of course. So when we sin, we harm ourselves, certainly. And I don't think this is a right argument to say that if we didn't sin, then the forgiveness of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wouldn't have shown itself. Yes, now that we sin, and now that, well, majority of people sin and He forgives, we understand that. But I don't think for realizing that absolutely need to sin. Just looking at the creation, seeing how He has catered for us, and the way, of course, every people behave on the earth, the shortcomings that they have, not sins, the shortcomings that they have. Just like the prophets who, because of their shortcomings, they really, really felt that forgiveness of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for them. So I don't think it's the right argument. It's just like the argument that we have to somehow support and facilitate the mischief on the earth so that Imam al-Mahdi comes. Because if this is not this does not happen, if the earth is not filled with mischief, then Imam wouldn't come, so we have to do it. It's just like this sort of argument.
So is it a question of interpretation or authenticity of this hadith? Or
I think it's interpretation. The way we understand the hadith is very important. Yes, of course, now that the majority of the people sin, then his forgiveness is apparent for ordinary people, but not really for the saints. They don't need to see that. To realize.
I don't know if I understand you, but the three names you gave was Naba, Mursalat, and Amma Yatasalun.
Mu'sirat. Wa anzalna min al mu'sirat.
Take in the beginning, you say that. One of the Tafasi says that this surah was revealed towards the end of the Prophet's life in Mecca.
Yeah.
Whereas what you discussed suggests that it's in the third year, or maybe in the third year of his life. Mm-hmm. These are two extremes. I mean, why should somebody say that this is, looks like more in the last, towards the last years of his life in Mecca? Obviously, I mean, the one who has done the first tafsir of the Quran must be a learned person, so why should he?
No, there are always this disagreement about exegetes or scholars of the Quran about the chronology of the revelation of different verses. I mean, even the lists which are produced by different scholars are varied to very great extent. And people have tried to devise different ways, for example, to verify whether a chronology produced by one scholar is right or wrong. For example, the late Mehdi Bazargan in Iran, the the first prime minister after the revolution. He was also a very, very familiar person with the Quran. I don't say he was an exegete, but he was very familiar. He had worked on the Quran to a very great extent. And he tried to devise a technique to find out about those chronologies. And that was the length of the ayat of every surah on the average, and with a very, very complicated mathematical formula. He produced a chronology of himself, which was very close to other chronologies, saying that when we find the length of the ayah of a surah to be short, the shorter the length of the ayah, the closer to the beginning of revelation. The longer the length of the ayah, the closer to the demise of the prophet. And with that method, he tried to devise a chronology, to introduce a chronology, which of course, again, it could not be relied upon. So we have many, many different chronologies mentioned.
With regard to ta'wil, if the word never is taken as the ta'wil be the same for every word of Quran where the word appears, or just for that surah?
You mean wherever we hear about Naba and Azim or Naba?
Everywhere that word appears or that phrase appears, will the ta'wil be the same, or does the ta'wil differ depending on the surah?
No, your ta'wil is very, very specific. You have to have heard it about the very specific verse from the Imam alayhi salam, not from anyone else, because no one else has this knowledge of ta'wil. It's only the Imam or the Prophet who have the knowledge of ta'wil. So you cannot extend it to other similar verses.
Muhammad